Lowe's knows you want to get even more value for the holiday. That's why as a MyLowe's Rewards member, you get new member deals on holiday decor, tools, and more. And you earn points when you shop. More points equal more rewards to help you save on holiday and more. Not a member? Join for free today at Lowe's.com/MyLowe's Rewards. Because Lowe's knows deals. Program subject to terms and conditions. Points are awarded on eligible purchases. See Lowe's.com/terms for full details. Subject to change.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 7, Episode 7. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario. I am joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We're also joined by Jaime Lippis Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It's going well. I don't know. I'm going to restrict my... It's going fine. It's fine up here in Canada. There's nothing going on in Canada that we should worry about. Well, I mean, yet.
Yeah. Yes. Wait till next year.
Let's go with yet. Yeah. All right. So on the fact check thing, Jaime mentioned last week, we were talking about the changes to the beginning of Lower Decks. And he mentioned the big green hand that grabs the Borg cube. The big green hand is Apollo's hand from Who Dorns for Adonis, which was the season 2, episode 2 of the original series. And the starship is traveling and this giant hand grabs it. And Jonathan, I think last year for Christmas, bought me the Hallmark Enterprise with the big glowing green hand. And you can actually, it's actually got a slot where you can put a Christmas light in. So if you have it hanging on your tree, it will in fact glow green.
Cool.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. And it sits on the desk behind me, in which people may or may not have noticed. All right. We'll move on to the headline. We're going to catch up with some of the headlines that we skipped last week, and I'm going to throw it over to Jaime and Jonathan first up to discuss.
Yeah. Well, let's start with some Trek news. We got some interesting news this week. So they were talking about the fact that there is a lot of fans who are interested in the possibility of a Star Trek Legacy series. So this would be a spin-off coming out of the Star Trek Picard 3 seasons that sort of brought together different parts of the different crews, including Jeri Ryan playing her famous role as Seven of Nine. She was at a Comic-Con recently and was asked if she was interested in being part of the Legacy storyline, and she basically said, you know, yeah, I'm very interested in doing that. As a matter of fact, they approached me about doing something before they sort of settled in on Legacy that was going to be basically the Captain Seven show. And I was going to be the captain of my own ship and they were going to sort of spin me off in my own thing. But I didn't love the vibe of it. And so I decided, no, I passed on the idea of that. And now I'm, along with everybody else, rallying around the idea of doing something like Star Trek Legacy. Pretty interesting that they were kind of headed that direction. Although if you sort of follow Seven's journey through that series, it would have probably made sense. I think even if they were going to do the Legacy series, obviously it makes sense for her to be the captain and it makes sense for her to be sort of one of the main stars. But yeah, what do you guys think of the idea of sort of not Legacy just disregarding some of those other elements that we saw in the third season of Picard and just doing a Jeri Ryan 7 of 9 show.
Well, can you catch us up on Legacy? Is that coming?
They haven't confirmed it. So there's been a big groundswell. So obviously they teased it at the end of Picard.
Including Richard Bertram and all that stuff? Or?
So they talked about doing... So at the end of Picard, we basically ended with, you know, obviously the TNG crew gets together, but we also end up with this sort of secondary bunch of, you know, not original TNG crew members who are all sort of brought together by the circumstances. So we end up with 7 of 9. We end up with Picard and Crusher's son. We end up with, you know, the makings for the next thing. And then, of course, it ends with that stinger that Q shows up and starts talking to Jack Crusher. So they kind of set the stage for, like, this could be the next thing. So everybody was immediately saying, as we were, where's this thing? Where's this thing? It hasn't been confirmed by Paramount. It hasn't been confirmed by any of the showrunners. They haven't said whether they're going to do it at all. I think there's a lot of interest in it. I think the fans want it. I think that a lot of the actors want it. I don't know what the delay is, but that's kind of where it's been sitting in limbo for a while now. Maybe it was just, hey, we've already got, you know, multiple shows. And, you know, obviously they just wrapped Picard. They just wrapped Discovery. But at that point, they already had Star Trek Academy in the line. They had Star Trek, the Section 31 series that became the movie. So they had a lot of Trek, plus Strange New Worlds, plus Lower Decks. They had a lot of Trek on their plate. So maybe they were just like, well, we're not going to focus on this yet because we've got all these other things going on. But now that we've sort of, we're already finished Picard, we've already finished Discovery, we're about to finish Lower Decks, it seems like it would be nice to know if that was coming or not, but so far, nothing.
I mean, Seven is a pretty cool character. Mm-hmm. In general, like, I also, you know, like, Jadzia Dax as well, I think is another one of my favorite characters, but.
Well, theoretically, yeah, Jadzia is dead. Dax is alive.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. I thought when the symbiote leaves, I guess the symbiote kills the host when they leave.
Well, in theory, the host body dies and the symbiote can survive. So that's what happens, because Jadzia gets killed in the end of spoilers for a show that's been over for 25 years. In Deep Space Nine Season 6, Jadzia dies, but Dax lives and then gets transferred to Ezri?
Yes. Sorry, Jadzia died in an accident?
No, she was killed.
Killed by
Gul Dukat when he was all hopped up on Paul Wraith energy.
Yep. Yep.
Oh.
Remember, it was like the evil wormhole aliens. It was like the counterparts that he put his poker chips into.
Bad guy. Never liked that guy.
Yep.
What do you think, Jaime? 7 of 9?
I think it'd be a good show. I think there was a lot of promise for that coming out of the, you know, tail end of season 3 of Star Trek Picard. So I'm shocked they didn't just push a whole bunch of money at it. It's going to be kind of weird that they're going to be putting all their money bags for Trek, at least, on another season of Strange New Worlds, which is good, solid, and hoping that they can continue with the Discovery crew carry-ons or holdover crossovers going into the Academy stuff. You got money, go ahead and put some more in there. You already have the bridge set. You already have the 3D model for the ship. What's left?
What's left is resurrecting Todd Stashwick to come back and reprise his role from that Picard series, because he was so much fun. All right, let's move from the Star Trek to the Star Wars. A couple things this week. The news came out today that apparently there is another trilogy. Add this to the long list of films that are potentially going to be made around Star Wars. There's just theoretically a ton of things that are in development. I honestly feel like they're just hiring everybody under the sun, seeing what they come up with, and then deciding what they're going to do. But today's news is that Lucasfilm has signed a deal with Simon Kinberg to develop a new trilogy of Star Wars films. Kinberg's going to write them, and he's going to produce them. Now, you probably should know the name Simon Kinberg because he's worked on a ton of stuff, but he is, in the Star Wars universe, well-known for being one of the sort of three primary brains behind Star Wars Rebels, which is one of my all-time jams. So that I found extremely encouraging. There is, depending on which site you go to, so Deadline broke this story today. It's a question of which part you want to believe as far as what this potential trilogy is. Some sites have speculated that this could be episodes 10, 11, and 12 of the Skywalker saga, and that each of the films, 10, 11, and 12, will be set in one of the different time periods of the different parts of the Skywalker trilogy. Which, again, I don't know how they would know that, insiders say, but it is also possible there are other stories that are swirling around out there that are saying this is going to be an entirely new saga and is going to be sort of kicking off a new part of the Star Wars saga. So, again, your mileage may vary, but I guess the bottom line is we're getting somebody who has really good bona fides, who has written a lot of good things, although he's also written some terrible things. He wrote X-Men Dark Phoenix. he also wrote X-Men Apocalypse. He also wrote the Fantastic Four movie that came out in 2015. And he also wrote Days of Future Past, the other X-Men movie, and X-Men The Last Stand. But he also wrote Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is a pretty good movie. And
you don't like the X-Men movies, I would tell, getting from
I
that?
I like some of the X-Men movies. Days of Future Past, the fact that it just like completely glossed over like character deaths and never addressed that they were dead was a really big gaping hole in that. And then
aren't they just caught in the snap somewhere?
I guess. I mean, yeah, completely different part of the thing. I thought Apocalypse had some really cool characters and action, but it was overall the plot was nonsensical and pretty terrible. And I thought Dark Phoenix was an abomination. It was awful. So, again, your mileage may vary on his writing work. Also, he has been a producer on some pretty incredible stuff, including The Martian, Deadpool, Logan, you know, so again, this is somebody who's got some cred and he's very good at what he does. So hopefully this means that he can do a good job. And as I say, working on Rebels, I mean, again, Rebels is one of my all-time favorite Star Wars things. Maybe one of the all-time, maybe top handful of things. So we'll see what he can come up with. Yeah, new trilogy. Do you like the concept of an episode 10, 11, and 12? Do you like the concept of something entirely different? What grabs you?
Well, I mean, I thought we already were getting a trilogy around Rey Skywalker, right? Or something around her. I liked Andor was Star Wars, but not Star Wars, but Star Wars, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it would be nice to sort of see something other than, you know, something around this one particular dude who finds a lightsaber, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one who loses his arms and, you know, becomes the leader of the free world. Sorry, there's going to be these political jokes all through the show today, I'm sure. But anyway, it'd be nice to see something different for a change. I mean, similar but different, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to go off and like to the other end of the galaxy and have some story just for the sake of having a story. But, you know, like it could be, you know, ramifications of the Galactic Empire from another perspective, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, planet destroying or star destroying kind of stuff as well, right? It could be just, you know, like I think people like Star Wars. They like the sort of, you know, Seven Samurai kind of style, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, don't hire somebody really, really good and put them in the first episode and kill them off, you know?
Please, again.
Yeah, please. Yeah, especially if they're Canadian.
I mean, what do you think?
I think there's potentially some interest if done right. I think the done right is having everything planned out top to bottom. It doesn't mean you have to script it out necessarily, but you need to understand how you're going to get from point A to point B to point C to complete the trilogy, however that works. And I think you also need to make sure that the directing doesn't change hands willy-nilly and that whoever's stepping in understands that they have to fulfill a role. I think we can say a lot about, you know, various opinions of how much sort of directorial vision does somebody get if they're a Marvel Cinematic Universe director. I've seen some complaints of like, hey, like it's already sort of planned out and you just need to fill in the colors according to the number chart right here. But at least you don't have the Marvel movies like actively working against each other in any sort of way. They do try to add to each other, work together. So I hope that's the approach that they're going to take here. Having it under a singular vision, I think would probably help that.
Yeah. 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 I honestly think one of the strengths that Kinberg brings is that he is also an A-list producer. I'm hoping that that has some sway on how this is handled as well, that, you know, maybe he could try and appeal for a little less. We'll make it up as we go kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, from some good Star Wars news to some sad Star Wars news, this week we also lost a very famous Star Wars artist. Greg Hildebrand passed away this week. He was 85 years old. Hildebrand is one of those people whose name you may not know when you first hear it, but you will certainly recognize his work when you see it. One of the very famous original posters for Star Wars, the, you know, very Conan the Barbarian, Luke with his shirt open down to his chest, Princess Leia at his feet, posters. We'll have a link in the show notes. You can obviously take a look. You know, Greg Hildebrand was a legend in the world that I sort of fall into of sci-fi and comic books, very famously doing a lot of work around Dungeons and Dragons and Lord of the Rings and comic books and Heavy Metal magazine. And just, I mean, he even did the album cover for a Black Sabbath album. Like, this guy was like just an absolute icon of sci-fi fantasy art. And it's, you know, again, obviously we're losing a number of people who worked on that original film, that they seem to be going quicker and quicker, which is very sad. But it was really nice to see this week when he passed away, just the number of people who were taking to social media to share pieces of his work, to talk about just what an absolute gentleman he was to meet in person at conventions, and over the years, people's interactions, other artists talking about working with him. And it sounds like he was a terrific human being as well as an amazing artist. And so big life for Greg, and he will certainly be missed.
Now, that poster is pretty iconic, and it's kind of wild to see that it's pretty spot on in general, but then also you look at the details, like, man, they made Luke like absolutely ripped.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Leia's a little bit more cheesecake than sort of warrior princess, but it feels like not so important to get the specifics per se. And again, I'm not poo pooing the idea of being more accurate, but it just sort of nails the feel of the movie.
Yeah. And it, as far as like an enticement, which is what a lot of posters certainly were back in the day before you could just pull up your phone and dial up a trailer and everything else, you know, the posters were a selling feature. And so to have something that is just as dynamic as Greg Hildebrand's work, where, you know, even if you didn't know what that movie's about, you'd be like, what's happening here? There's spaceships. There's guy's got a laser sword. There's this menacing face of a robot in behind him, which is Darth Vader. Like, all of it says, like, I got to watch this movie. So, yeah, what an icon. He was... I remember being a little kid and collecting trading cards that came out around Star Wars when I was four, 5 years old. And, you know, for a quarter, you got a pack full of cards that had scenes from the movie. But on the backside of a certain number of the cards was basically a puzzle. So you could actually lay the cards together and you could build your own version of the iconic Greg Hildebrand poster from the back of these trading cards. And so I remember being 4 or 5 years old, and, you know, my brother and I would get our packs of cards and we would try and, you know, oh, we need this part. Okay. Well, you know, okay. If we get a couple more packs, we can fill this in. I remember building this very iconic picture because, again, even back in that era, it was not as easy to find the art and the posters and stuff like that. So yeah, people kind of forget that pre George Lucas movie merchandising was pretty small, all things being equal. Tim, you got some more Star Wars news for us.
Yeah, the quick one here. The Skeleton Crew trailer dropped. We were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. It's a bunch of kids who accidentally start a starship, according to the... they stumble across a starship and they end up flying through space. And what was the name of that movie? It was a movie about a kid who did the same thing. Not The Flight of the Navigator, but maybe that's what I'm thinking of. The kids just fall into the, you know, Star Wars universe by accident.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. That's a TV show, I take it, right?
Yeah. So that's coming out to beginning of December on Disney Plus. The first two episodes that come on the 4th of December, and it's going to carry on from there. Yeah, it's a sort of a fun trail. It's got a bit of a sort of a, yeah, you're right, like the Explorers slash Flight of the Navigators slash Goonies kind of vibe to it. You know, a bunch of kids find themselves in a situation over their heads and somehow have to kind of figure out how to make it work. And in this case, they seem to be getting some assistance from an unlikely helper in Jude Law as a Jedi Knight, which is pretty cool. And interesting that, you know, to hear a 40-year-old song being used to sell this in Peter Schilling's Major Tom versus the sort of traditional John Williams orchestral kind of piece was an interesting take on it, too. It definitely lent a bit of a Stranger Things kind of vibe to it, but it looks fun. I wonder, you know, we talked about Star Trek Prodigy. We were jokingly calling it Starter Trek because it was kind of like, hey, kids, you want to learn all about Star Trek? Watch this show. That is my only minor concern, is if this is like skewed towards a younger audience, if the lead characters are kids, I wonder if it's going to be a little, you know, hey, how does the Force work? I wonder if it's going to be a little bit juvenile, because It kind of at a couple spots in the trailer, kind of, I was like, okay. But I don't know. But Jaime, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think it looks pretty interesting because it's well described as the Goonies with Jude Law in Star Wars. So it looks like it'll be fun. Genre changes are always kind of interesting for this. We've talked about The Mandalorian doing pretty well as like a cowboy spaghetti western sort of thing. So, you know, 1980s kids movie, kids adventure movie is a good take to try out.
I mean, again, worked like crazy for Stranger Things. So, you know, there's a template. Okay. Next up, just a couple things to catch up on from last week. We did get some more news from the end or beginning, I guess, of the finale for Agatha. There was a trailer that covered off sort of what we could expect from Marvel over the next little while. So we got a little bit more of Daredevil Born Again, including a release date coming on March 4th. We got a bit more of footage from that, so we get to see, you know, Matt Murdock and Kingpin and the Punisher and just all the band back together from the great Netflix series. So that's looking really cool, and there's actually some characters from the more modern runs of Daredevil that are mixed in there, including Muse, which is a really cool character you're gonna discover when you start watching that show. And so that was pretty cool. And sort of concurrent to that, they also announced, or didn't announce, they kind of slyly dropped the Blade movie from next year's release schedule. It was supposed to come out next year, the Mahershala Ali-led Blade movie. But as we've talked about in this, there have been issues with keeping a writer, keeping a director. Apparently it's gone through multiple rewrites. So they haven't rescheduled it. They haven't announced a slate for 2026. It does sound like it's happening. Everybody wants it to happen. It is sort of tied to, they want to bring more of these sort of mystical, magical characters into the MCU. They might be aiming towards doing, you know, like a monster team up thing, which we'll see. But either way, Blade's not coming next year, so we don't have to worry about that. But yeah, we also saw, you know, the final season of What If is coming. We got, you know, just a look at sort of a ton of different projects, Ironheart. And so, yeah, lots of stuff coming our way from Marvel next year. Did anything catch your eyes when you saw that trailer, guys?
No, just the Daredevil.
Yeah, I mean, I love that series, so I'm in.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. Seems on brand with what the Netflix version was, so that's pretty good. I think we had some faith there because the Hawkeye and Echo stuff seemed to blend them in pretty well and keep the styles going. Even Spider-Man showing up in there was helpful and seeing how that works.
Yeah, there's a new Spider-Man cartoon coming next year on Disney Plus as well, right? All right, a couple more things. So we weren't sure. We talked about Dune season three, Dune Messiah, the third chapter of the Dune film trilogy, and the fact that it might be a while before we see it because Denis Villeneuve was committing to other projects. And obviously it's supposed to be set a little bit further along in the timeline for the characters that we've come to know through the first two movies. But There's a story from our good friends over at IO9 where they're talking about the fact that actually it could be sooner than we think, because Warner Brothers has set a December 26 release date for another movie by Denis Villeneuve, and they have not said that it is or is not this, but it has led to speculation that it may be sooner than we think, because that would be only a couple of years away before we would see the next Dune installment. For perspective, the events in the first two Dune movies lead into Dune Messiah, but Dune Messiah is set 10 years in the future from the events there. So it would be a bigger gap. Now, again, aging people up, whatever, that's fine. We can do that. But although making Timothy Chalamet look older, I'm not sure how you do that. But
yeah, that's exactly.
But it would be interesting if we would get that sooner. I think I was okay with the idea of actually a little bit of distance from it, because it was great, and I don't want them to rush. I don't want them to have to do these movies, quickly or hastily to try and meet some sort of, profit-driven timeline. I want it to be the best artistic work that these people can create. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of silly. Like, I mean, I get that Chalamet is a huge box office draw, and so is Zendaya. But if the story requires it, it's a 30-year-old or 40-year-old, then all the power to it. Because I mean, the first movie is actually the first book, right? Mm-hmm. Broken, or first two movies, I should say. It's the first book broken into two parts, right? So
yeah,
and there are many, 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 many Dune books,
and they get weirder as they go.
Yeah.
Last thing for me, just some news that Rick and Morty has been renewed through season 12. So, if you were worried that you weren't going to see any more fun adventures from the fellows at we knew we were getting up until season 10 previously, but now they've added two more seasons onto that. So, yeah, we're going to be getting these until probably at least 2029. That would be about the earliest. If they don't extend it even further, that we're going to see at least another 5 years worth of Rick and Morty. So, good news.
So, season 9 was the one with the new actor?
I think that is correct.
The voice actor? Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish, like, the solo opposites, they did the same thing. They had to change the actor voice, and I don't know if it's the same actor or not, but he has a different voice than the original person he replaced, right? Or he puts on a different voice, whereas in the Rick and Morty he tries to sound like Rick, right?
Yeah.
Which I guess is iconic, but
I think there's higher stakes on the Rick and Morty than there is probably on Solar Opposites.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean they could have played with the idea of reflected in the fact that it's a new voice actor changing the voice, right?
Yep.
But otherwise, we'll tune in. What did you think of season 9 compared to the previous seasons?
I mean, it was interesting because it had a real arc to it. Like, it felt more cohesive, I think, as a season than some of the previous seasons. You know, it was the whole, Evil Morty and the Rick trying to find the original Rick and, the Rick that killed his wife. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, some of that stuff had been so long simmering that it was almost like, oh, we're finally doing this. Okay, cool. But yeah, I mean, it continues to be an amusing show. I don't think it's quite as crackling as maybe season sort of 2, 3, 4, 5, but it's still enjoyable. Like, I look forward to watching it. When it's not on, I don't think about it anymore. people are like, oh, this new season. I'm like, cool, I'm going to watch the new season. And then when it goes away, I just drops right out of my head now. I don't really give it too much thought.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I found that season was different. I mean, and you're right. Like, I think 3, 4, 5 were probably really good seasons. So I guess it's natural, I guess, that happens, right?
Yeah.
Cool. We'll hand it over to Jaime for some stories.
Yeah. People are looking at their desk drawers, their libraries. They're looking everywhere and like, look, where is some IP at? And the nice people at Apple said, you know what? Oregon Trail. It's right here on my desk. I still have the box, apparently. And they're going to turn this into a movie, according to the nice people at The Hollywood Reporter.
I've never played Oregon Trail. Have you?
Yes. So I grew up in an era where there was a flush with cash for various schools. This is probably everywhere at every level, but the elementary school levels definitely got a bunch of computer labs. It was the era that they were running Apples a lot. Apple was really big in education at the time. And I do remember the Oregon Trail. And most people don't remember anything about the game except you inevitably die of dysentery.
Dysentery, yeah.
It was like the only outcome of the game that anybody statistically would run into, even if though there were potentially ways to win. And I admit you can like watch those top-notch players on YouTube. You can watch people like speedrun it.
They actually put out a series a few years back, maybe 5-6 years, of handheld versions of classic games. And one of the games they put out is this little handheld, like, you know, portable game was a copy of Oregon Trail. And I must admit, I was kind of tempted. I think it was like $20 or $25. And I was like, oh, it's just a little bit too much for that kind of quirk. But I loved that someone was like, let's put this in its own unique box and sell this as like, hey, kids, want to play some dialogue-based video games from the 1980s?
Yeah. It looked very 8-bitty. Was it sort of also on Commodore as well, or just on Apple? Or
No. It was definitely widely spread game on sort of the PC computer era. And it
I seem to remember it had a very sort of rendered box, like it had an illustrative box, but I never played it, but... Looking at the little screenshot here that's in the article, I get the real impression it was okay. It was like super duper bad bitmap graphics, right?
Yeah, it was not about the
graphics. State of the art bitmap graphics.
Yeah.
It's just to point things out because people are wondering perhaps if it's a dramatic thing. No, it's apparently going to be a comedy and a musical. So
musical. All right.
They described it in this article here as being in the vein of Barbie, just to give you an idea. So.
Ooh. Now I don't know how to feel about that.
And I guess the next one is in the vein of reboots and continuations. The label on the tin here says that the Scary Movie franchise is going to get a reboot. It's still going to have the Wayans brothers, though. So they're actually making their return. I think they weren't around for a couple of them. I believe there are 4, maybe 5 of those.
Is Anna, what's her name, going to be in it?
Anna Faris. She really should be, right? At least as a cameo or something, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Or you go the Laurie Strode route from Halloween, just like Jamie Lee Curtis was around since forever.
Or Courtney Cox in the Scream movie. Scream, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just watched the beginning of Scream the other day. I didn't watch the whole movie, just the first part with the phone call, you know, in the house.
Great scene. One of the best.
No, I'm talking about the first one. I'm talking about the new one with the girl who plays Wednesday.
Oh, okay. The Jenna Ortega, yeah.
The new, I guess the Scream 5 or 6 or whatever it is. The new next generation.
Yeah.
Before the show, we were discussing the veracity of this next one. According to Variety, it's real. We were sort of joking about people breaking their NDAs and putting their families and very lives at risk for getting us a copy. That's all in jest. We're not actually doing that. But supposedly, at the New York Comic Con, perhaps the fine people of Gotham can let us know if this is legit. Supposedly, there is a combination of the two worlds that would be the Karate Kids, Karate Kid cinematic universe, where you have the OG Ralph Macchio school of Karate Kid movies and the newer Jackie Chan series or film. Apparently those exist in the same universe, which is a bit of a surprise. You sort of thought it was a reboot or remake. No, it's just a different rhyme and a different time kind of thing. So supposedly that'll bring these crew together.
I never saw the Jackie Chan one. Does he not also play Miyagi?
He plays the equivalent of Miyagi, but what is he? Mr. Han? Did they say the character's name in here? Mr. Han.
Okay.
And it was Jaden Smith plays the rough equivalent of Daniel LaRusso, but critically not named Daniel LaRusso. So I guess they can exist in the same one. And you know what? I'm going to throw this in there. We really need to have Hilary Swank in here somehow. Because if anybody's been keyed up with the Cobra Kai series, I'm awaiting the final part of season 5, 6, whatever season we're on, the final season. They've pulled out every possible nostalgic person that they could, with the exception of perhaps Hilary Swank as the next Karate Kid, I think was that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
If there you go. We had kids at that theater for that one.
Little did you all know that that was actually a cinematic universe with the long game.
Well, speaking of like this is just a real quick cap. As we're looking at through these articles for the other stories we're just going through, I just stumbled across the Alien Romulus is coming out on Disney Plus and Hulu, I believe. The headline is they slithered onto Hulu and Disney, coming out just before Thanksgiving, so November 21st, if you're looking forward to the next Romulus or Alien franchise installment, as it were. But in the meantime, we'll move on to our main part of the show where we're talking about something Star Trek related, and this time we're talking about Star Trek Lower Decks, Season 5, Episode 4, A Farewell to Farms. Ta-ta-ta. Play on the... And it was interesting, you know, this one had a completely different cold open. I was looking forward to going through the cold open for that green hand thing I talked about earlier, but yeah, disappointed. It was very cinematic, this one, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it was an homage, and I did not pick up on what it was. It felt very familiar, but I could not place it.
Probably the book. Have you read Farewell to Arms?
No, I don't think I have. I think I owned a copy of it, but I don't think I've read it yet. But even that just, it felt like... kind of a, I don't know, it felt like a scene that I had seen before, but it was very, I mean, it was kind of hilarious where they, you know, they're out there picking the blood worms and then taking them in and stomping on them like they're grapes to make the blood wine. We've never really kind of gotten into that process of how blood wine.
Or that large rodent-y looking pig thing that they were.
Oh, the targ, yeah.
Targs, yeah. And the various different sizes of targs in this one too, but it had that sort of brother, two brothers, and you know the ones come back from the war, kind of doesn't want to talk about what happened in the war, kind of thing, and that sort of vibe. Like the main character was a Klingon captain, right? And tons of Klingon jokes in this one. But we should get to our elevator pitches before we get too far down the road.
Sure.
So I just thought In Search of Strange New Meals was great.
yeah
what do you guys got?
I grabbed Boimler's line, "This episode is Klingon as hell."
Yeah definitely.
I had the two parts of the A plot and the B plot. Mariner helps a disgraced Klingon get his groove back, while Dr. Miglino deals with members of his own species that are a pain in the
cloaca. I love it. So this episode does actually pick up from the previous episode, right? So this all ties back to the story arc where all the ships were going missing, and the whole Nick Locarno plot to have the Lower Decks rise up and take away the power from the captains. So the Captain Ma was the captain of the Klingon ship that they found on the planet Sherbal 5, right? He was one of the captains who had basically been left behind when his crew mutinied. And so they rescued him in that episode and returned him. And so here is where we're picking up on him after. So we actually have met this character. It is somebody who does have a history with Boimler, and particularly with Mariner. And so there is actually some continuity to it that... you know, it can be easy to forget sometimes because Lower Decks is just so fanciful and fun and stuff like that. But they are kind of building continuity and relationships and stuff as well. So this was kind of a through line from an earlier story arc.
And Boimler has way too much fun getting beat up by Klingons.
with his mustache.
Oh, and his sort of, we're calling that a beard now? Yeah.
Oh my God. That, as a running joke, is one of my favorite things they've ever done. He just keeps getting like more and more crazy with the stash. It honestly, so just as a quick aside, my son is not shaving because it is Movember. We are 7 days in. I can honestly report that it's not going well, but I am curious. He sort of said, do you think it's worth keep going? I'm like, oh God, please keep going. And in my mind, I'm like, this is like Boimler. This is going to be so much fun. And I can say that because he hasn't listened because he hasn't watched Lower Decks yet this season. So,
yeah. Well, I stopped shaving and I never really got into it. So I probably had I remember being teased about having a see-through beard when I was in university too. So
yeah. Yeah, I got into it with my son a while back because he did not believe that in my senior high school photo that I had a mustache and a goatee. And he's like, come on. And so I dug out my yearbook and showed him. It's not impressive. And it certainly does not. It's not one continuous thing. It's not a Van Dyke. But I do have a patch of thick enough fur on my chin and a little mustache. So, yeah, admittedly, I was 19 at that point. But still, yeah, anyways. It's
the thought that counts.
Absolutely. What did you guys have for your pew pew pews?
I guess a few different options as part of the tests. I went with the pain sticks as kind of an interesting one to see visually and the way that they work their way through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had the Mach versus Bar fight just because, man, a Klingon fight is always a great one, especially when they use the pink blood. You know, they're stabbing each other and the blood is like, actually kind of went for it for a show that is generally pretty violence. I mean, there's certainly violence, but there's no graphic violence in this show. They kind of went for it. You know, there's a lot of blood splattering all over the place in that fight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was surprised. Like, well, even the killing and the maiming, that was kind of an interesting thing, right?
Yeah.
Admittedly, it's an adult-oriented cartoon with the bleeped-out swear words and everything too. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Easter eggs. I just obviously there was a ton of Klingon stuff in there. They were on Quonos. We saw Targs, which of course we have seen in live action before. We talked about going back to Sherbal 5 in the previous episode. How to make blood wine. So that was kind of fun. The pain sticks. Obviously, we've seen pain sticks before. They mentioned Kales. There's just like a million different jokes, all of which came with an accompanying excellent Boimler quote, which we'll get into in a minute. The fact that they actually named Miglimo's character's planet Cloaca was the funniest. That was like the stupidest, easiest Easter egg, but just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A non-traditional one, but it does get pointed out in script, is Klingons with boob windows.
Oh, I had that in my quotes.
Yeah.
Ooh, what crawled up her boob window and died?
Yeah.
That's a crazy, crazy effort. Anyway, there was all kinds of like Klingon calling each other Patak and all that kind of stuff. And I looked up experience bleed when the two guys were riding their bikes and they run into each other and wave their fists at each other.
Mm.
So bleed is punishment.
Mm-hmm. You experience bleed. Punishment.
You experience bleed.
And we finally found out Dr. Miglimo's first name is Gabers. Yeah, they just mentioned it when he's talking with the food critics, Gabers. Yeah. Good quotes. Jaime, what do you got for your quotes?
Right at the beginning, I had one. Prepare to taste defeat. I will not be bested by some dishonorable swine. And it's literally Ma and the Targ.
Yeah.
I already said the In Search of Strange New Meals, which Miglimo says. And I love Klingon bureaucratic minutiae.
Yeah.
Minutia, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked Mariners trying to trick the Klingons with, you know, if we don't return favors, we get fed to a bear.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you should practice fighting a bear.
And then a few different great Boimlers, but this is going to be Klingon as hell. It was great. I can't believe I'm getting pain sticked. It's so Klingon. And now that's a big Targ. But my favorite is probably Maelor, who is the captain's brother, when he says, "You have behaved like month-old gach, and not in a good way." Like, what?
Well, you had it to gach fresh, right?
That's right. I thought gach was supposed to be fresh.
Yeah. Well, but when it's month-old, it can't be that good, right?
I don't know. Here he seems to be inferring this. Maybe it's one of those things that's like really good when it's fresh, not so good when it's a little bit spoiled, but gets really good when it gets really spoiled.
Maybe.
So the other part of this episode that I had from the big question is just what we talked about last week, which is there does seem to be this underlying plot that is probably the big sort of through line for the season about these mysterious
portals. Plot holes.
Yes.
The plot holes. Yes.
Yeah. So we talked about it last week that, you know, this does seem to be a thing that's connecting, and here they make the connection. These actually look like somebody's deliberately making these things. So any further speculation on who, I mean, they went to Nick Locarno. I mean, that is some incredibly awesome deep cuts. I can't even imagine where these lunatics, Mike McMahon and the people who are working on this show, what kind of ridiculous deep cut Star Trek thing they're going to try and pull out to get us for this final season. But any ideas who could make dimensional rifts and why?
Yeah, trying to think. Q, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, what would be the weirdest answer, the most fun.
I was wondering if they were going to go a... So I had posited and wondered, you know, is growing up the big bad? I don't know if they're going to go into this twice, but I was, given that they already had Mariner see herself in an alternate reality and what that was like. Mm-hmm. But I did wonder if they were going to pull some sort of combo of All Good Things and Endgame, the TNG and Voyager finales, where you have future Mariner fulfilling a Picard and Janeway, future versions of those-esque, doing something that the current timeline doesn't realize they're going to have to participate in to save the galaxy or the universe kind of thing.
That's a really good call, Jaime. That might be a really good angle, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it would be fun if it was sort of tying it all together. It would also be fun, I mean... I think you guys feel the same way. I've come to love these characters. They're great. I really, really enjoy this series. I think a little glimpse at what the future holds for them would be great.
I had a question here related to the Cloacans, the Cloaca people. when they were testing out and doing their taste testing, they're using utensils that are kind of like sharp pliers, which makes them a combo of a fork and also chopsticks.
But also a beak, right?
Yeah, so I guess a beak is kind of like a fork chopstick that birds naturally have. It allows you to cut. It allows you to poke.
Oh, you mean and when they rolled out the tools, they had the different tools, but they all went to the one with that look like a pair of scissor beak, right?
Yeah. So the question to you is, that particular tool, would you make use of that if that actually existed in the real world?
Why?
So there's some food that you can eat with chopsticks that is a little inconvenient, where you have to be particularly skilled, and it certainly helps if you have good, sturdy chopsticks.
Like grains of rice? Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I was thinking more of the things that you end up having to... For some reason, to me, who didn't grow up culture of this, I'm like, why do I have to cut this thing with things that do not appear to be designed to cut? So having something that has a beak, I'm like, yeah, that would make it easier to cut. And then just pick it up as a little cube.
It's weird, though, because they kind of use them in a weird way, too, because they're like using to pull little chunks off of stuff, but like little sample tastes or something.
Well, there's an expression, eats like a bird, too, right? Just like really small bites, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's the gag. Would I use one of those? I mean, it's no less logical than a fork, I suppose. I mean, you're jamming something with pointy fork ends into your mouth.
Fork you can shovel in mass quantities, and chopsticks kind of slow you down, depending on your skill level, right?
But not in a bad way.
And the good news is we're only at episode 4.
True. More to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, we have some word translations here.
Are you looking up Klingon?
Yeah, I just happened to like, cha means two, and chadich means second. The bartender says nothing to serve but bagol. Bag means terminate, and gol means the opposite of thus bagol, a liquor that terminates an opponent. And we talked about beej already. Beej is to punish. Refers to the pub as poo gech. Poo means dregs, and gech means barrel. And I can't say these words.
I love that there is such a developed language for this species that, like, you can literally break it all down.
But wasn't James Doohan involved in writing and developing Klingon initially?
I can't remember who it was. I thought for some reason it was the Akutas that did it, but I don't know.
Yeah, let's see. Let's Type Klingon into the old Search-O-Matic. Klingon language. Yeah, no, you can actually, like, I do know it's definitely a language you can translate into, like, and people speak it, right?
Yeah. It may have been replaced with by, like, Dothraki or High Valyrian as the most popular nerd language.
True. Or the one from Lord of the Rings. Okay, the language basic sound, along with a few words, was devised by actor James Doohan.
Oh, interesting.
And producer John Povin in Star Trek The Motion Picture.
James, is there anything that excellent Canadian performer couldn't do?
Yeah, no, eh? Cool. All right.
Now a word from our sponsor. Now back to the show.
Speaking of birds, should we move on to the penguin?
Yeah.
Top hat. Getting on the top hat. Did you guys get where the name Top Hat came from?
Well, it was the movie that was playing, right?
Yes, it was the movie that was playing. That is correct.
Yes.
Fred Astaire, and
also.
Right?
Yep. And was it Fred Astaire or was it Jack Benny?
Fred Astaire.
Was it?
Was it? I wasn't sure. I was kind of, I guess I could have looked it up, but I was wondering if it was Fred Astaire.
No, it's one of Carol's favorite movies, Top Hat, which is why Jonathan should know it.
Oh, I promise you, I have watched that movie.
Yes.
Hopefully in a less dysfunctional way. My mom and I used to watch old Fred Astaire movies when I was a kid too. But
I'm sure. I think we have a VHS copy of it here.
Yeah,
store bought. I mean,
yeah,
cool.
Elevator pitch.
I have fun getting out.
Yeah. Have
I? I couldn't stick the landing on this, so I kind of just smooshed concepts together. So it's a title and then subtitle. It's Penguin Begins, Oz versus Sal and Sophia.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I just had Payback is a BITCH and so is Sophia.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, so she was pretty respectful to the mother character, you know?
Well, I think she was when she realized that Frances isn't well. I think once she realized that she, like, I think she was probably going to be terrible.
Like the niece, right? Yeah, like, don't do the niece, right?
So. Yeah, yeah. But this, I mean, from the opening flashback where we finally find out what exactly happened to Oz's brothers, which is that he killed them.
Accidentally.
That's a discussion, I suppose.
Well, in a brotherly kind of way, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have realized somewhere along in the evening, hey, this is probably not going well. And he just kind of kept his mouth shut and then obviously lets his mom believe that she was responsible because she turns, you know, obviously has a life of sadness and regret based on them dying. So, yeah.
Yeah, but by the same token, he as a kid though, he felt he was reveling in the I have her to myself kind of thing. He probably didn't think about the consequences of what he did, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he basically locked them in that sewer and they obviously drowned, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and again, they were playing a mean trick on him about his limp, right? So yeah. So was he mad? Was he, you know, was it just about his mom? Was it about, you know, putting them in their place? Was it about power? Yeah. But yeah,
I mean, don't know. His older brother seemed to be pretty decent in terms of like taking care of them in the 5 minutes we got to spend with that character, right?
So. Yeah, we didn't really flesh them out a lot, but yeah, it was an interesting sort of look back at just sort of who Oz is and how he got to be sort of where he is. Some more depth for the character, and then cutting to the present where obviously we left last episode with Sophia in the apartment with Vic and Frances, and then. You know, we find out that obviously, does it seem weird that she didn't kill Vic?
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a bit of maybe he was supposed to deliver the message, you know, hey, by the way, I've got your mom, although Oz would have figured that out, right? Like, I don't know. I get why it would have been obviously disappointing if that had been the fate, if mm-hmm. you know, we had come in and found Vic dead, that would have been a real downer for the show, but... It did feel a little incongruous, considering how violent this show has been, to just have him get banged in the head.
He is the Penguin's Robin, right? So,
I, and again, from a plot point, I understand, but like, it just doesn't necessarily fit with where Sophia's at. Where Sophia's like, you know, I want Oz to suffer. Why would he like? Why wouldn't she just kill his right hand? She knows who he is. I don't know. And then, yeah, like the sort of whole plot back and forth, the you know, Sal basically trying to make a play for Oz's turf and then dying of a heart attack mid-fight. And then,
well, like you said before, wasn't he just stabbed in the stomach like a week ago?
I know. Like, it was seriously, the first punch that Oz lands in his midsection, Sal should have just dropped to the ground and started crying like a, you know, a hurt child. Like, it just, yeah, again, incongruities. But that didn't take away from that being a really cool scene, right? Where they, you know, first they take over and then they get it back. And then obviously Oz sort of doing what he could to derive victory from, you know, what is otherwise a bit of a Pyrrhic victory. He didn't really win. He just won because Sal died.
Mm-hmm. Well, but this is his life experience, right? He killed his brothers accidentally and wins in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. So everything he's done so far has been, you know, clearing people out of his way, you know?
Yeah.
Through misadventure or through, you know, luck, I guess, in a lot of ways. That seems to be his way of getting, staying ahead, right?
Yeah, and then he does the whole pantomime afterwards of like, oh yeah, I've got you. And he basically like makes it sound like he got the upper hand, and then he shoots him a bunch of times and drags his body out to be like, I killed this guy. I'm the toughest, you know, nobody messes with me. I'm like, dude, drop dead in front of you. But
yeah, he's an extreme opportunist.
Yes.
And knows pretty well how to deal with it. And he does have a crew that helped out, right? I mean, when Sal shows up, there's like the one guy who's exchanging glances like, yeah, I'm straight up going to turn this into the darkness by pulling the power plug, rather than just sort of rolling over and be like, all right, kill that dude, I guess. You're the new boss. What do I care? He clearly had some people bought into his idea.
Yeah. And then this episode obviously culminates with what is theoretically supposed to be a prisoner exchange. You know, you take the drugs, give me my ma, we'll call it even. But obviously Oz is planning it as an ambush. And again, if you're a crime person, criminal, okay, someone had to have let them in the first set of doors. Do you not look in and be like, huh, coincidentally, there's just a guy in this car, whereas, like, we're expecting, you know, Oz's mom. And they let them drive, like, right up to the front without, like, checking it for, I don't know, explosives, guns, anything. Like, it again, incongruities. It just seems like a bit of a, I don't know. I just don't think that the Oz that they've established in the first seven episodes of this would be dumb enough to be not expecting something from Sophia, because all he's got in his hand is for leverage is the drugs and the fact that he killed Sal. She's got his mom. She has the upper hand. So why wouldn't he be ready for something underhand? I don't know. It bothered me. It kind of diminished. Like, Oz is supposed to be an opportunist, yes, but also intelligent enough to see the bad stuff coming. And in this one, he didn't see it coming at all, and it just kind of felt like a bit of a plot hole.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fact that she kind of draped the mother's coat over top of the bomb, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and then when the guy gets out and starts, like, hauling ass down the hallway, you're not like,
yeah, wouldn't that be a clue?
Maybe we should all go? Like, I don't know.
And ironically, he jumps down the hole where the sewer was where he killed his brothers, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that neighborhood man cannot catch a break. You know, we start the episode with Oz, you know, after the flashback, we get with Oz walking through there towards his mom's apartment, and the cars are all piled up everywhere, and the, you know, everything is still destroyed from the events of the Batman, and next thing you know, there's a 40-foot sinkhole in the middle of the street, people staggering around all over the place.
Yeah. Where's the federal government with their relief program, and, you know?
Yeah, where's FEMA? Come on.
Clean up those...
Oh, wait, it's New Jersey. It's supposed to be set in New Jersey. FEMA doesn't go to New Jersey.
Is it New Jersey?
Yeah, they established in a previous episode, it looks like it's basically supposed to be like Newark. It looks like it's across the river.
Oh, New Jersey to Gotham sort of thing.
Well, I mean, Gotham writ large, I think it's supposed to be in New Jersey. At one point, they actually show, somebody shows their ID and it actually says state of New Jersey. So.
Oh, okay, okay. So why, one question I have from this, if we're at the big question part, is why did Sophia send the niece to that insane asylum.
Well, it's not. It's an orphanage, essentially, right? It's not an insane asylum. It's supposed to be like a place for children, you know, to go find homes. Theoretically, she sent her there because she wanted her to find a new family and not grow up as a Falcone, right?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She says that when she goes in to see her. She's basically like, you know, you don't understand. I've done you the biggest favor that I could have done for you, which I've set you free, right? Like, I've taken away the upbringing that you were going to have, which is the upbringing that I had inside this crime family, by killing your parents and putting you here. I'm releasing you from all this baggage. Now, it doesn't look like a great place, but yeah.
It seems like Tim picked up on something that was apparently intentional. The HBO Max version of this has like a miniature podcast sort of thing where they go like 7 to 10 minutes afterwards explaining some of the things or going behind the scenes. And they did state that they intentionally laid out and I think redressed Arkham to be the orphanage to make it feel the same for Sophia and the little girl. Ended up in institutions. To be clear, it was meant to be a different orphanage, but it was meant to evoke that feeling of the Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, and they hammered that when Sophia walks in and she has the flashback to when she first walks into Arkham, right? Like, you're supposed to get that, like, oh my God, what have I done to my niece?
Yeah, like, why wouldn't she take her home? That's what I kept thinking.
Well, again, I think the idea is she doesn't want her as part of the crime family. She wants her to be, like, not a Falcone.
So she gifted her by killing her parents and putting her in this
Sophia's institution? Yeah, in Sophia's twisted mind, she thinks she actually did Gia a favor. Yeah. And she gave her freedom from this legacy of murder, death, and otherwise.
Yeah, such a nice person.
Yeah. There was definitely some decent quotes in this one, too, although we had to go through the ones that had massive amounts of expletives. I like when Francis first meets Sophia at the Falcone's house or the Gigante house. She says, "Did you bring me all the way out here to feed me toast, or are you going to kill me?" Which she's great. The woman who plays Francis is fantastic. When he realizes that Sal is dying and he just leans down as he's dying and says, "I beat you, Sal. You hear me? I beat you." Just that he wanted him to know that right as he's about to die. That is some cold stuff.
Yeah.
And then the last line from Sophia, "I want Oz to feel pain, the kind of pain that I have felt. I need him to suffer for what he's done." Just again, she's, Kristen Milioti's just been absolutely crushing it in this show. So, yeah. This was the penultimate one last episode. Obviously, there's this showdown that's looming. They go to Monroe's where we saw the flashback. And so, yeah, Sophia versus Penguin. Do you think they kill off the Sophia character?
Boy, I guess it depends on what you think. You know, is this a one and done miniseries? Is it going to have a season two or a spinoff series?
They have not said whether they intend to do it as anything other. This was listed as a miniseries. They haven't said anything about doing a sequel to it or anything else. All I've heard out of this is that it has been successful enough. They are now contemplating doing this kind of treatment with other Batman villains in this same universe. So in theory, this is supposed to be just sort of the bookended backstory / ongoing adventures of Oz. But they're also building a bit of a universe here, right? Like, they're giving us way more depth in Gotham than we got from the two and a half hour movie. So maybe it's beneficial to have characters like Sophia. And again, she's been amazing. Kristen Milioti's performance, the character has been so well written. At this point, it feels like breaking a stained glass window or something. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like, oh, but it's so good. But then also, maybe that's what that character needs and or deserves after everything that's happened in this show. You could argue that death might not be the worst thing for her because she's just so tortured.
Yeah.
I have a suspicion that she will. I think she had a bit of an epiphany in this episode about both Oz's mom and about Gia. About just how messed up she is by everything that happened. Again, she has that speech about, you know, they put me there and they expected me to just wither and die, but I got stronger. But then she's turned into a monster who just killed a bunch of people. I don't know. I just have a tough time imagining that her character that makes it out of the next one. I don't know.
Well, by the same token, why would the penguin survive in that case? So, although we know the penguin is like kind of an ongoing enemy of Batman, right?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, if they don't intend to use that particular iteration of
the Hangman, penguin, right? So
yeah, if they don't intend to use that iteration of the penguin again in a future Batman Matt Reeves project, like, who's to say they couldn't kill him, right?
Are they doing another Batman? Do we know?
Yes, they have announced they're going to continue doing this. That the last thing that exists outside of the reboot of the DCU is they're leaving the Matt Reeves Batman story alone, and they're going to cast a different actor as a different Batman to be within the DCU.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, because that worked out so well from the other Batmans, right?
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see.
We move on to our watch list. What do you think? I added brainstorming in here because I didn't really give one last week, but I did 2 weeks ago watch this movie called Brainstorm. It was a follow-up to an interview I did on More Than Just Code, where I was interviewing somebody who's a big VR guy and has been doing VR since his days in university, and he recommended that I watch Brainstorm. Basically, it's about a VR helmet that is being developed by Christopher Walken and Louise Fletcher. She's the chain-smoking scientist who comes up with this way of scanning your brain so that you can relive experiences and sensations and, you know, smells and the whole shoot and match. And of course, you know, the typical trope of, but this is from the 80s, right? So who knows, 83, right? The government, of course, wants to get their hands on it for weaponry and all that kind of stuff. And of course, the two scientists are like, no, not the government. My project, you can't take it away. And of course, you know, the guy who's funding it, you know, wants to put, you know, he's funding it and he's made all these promises to them about protecting them. And yet, you know, he's still selling out to the army, but you know, it is what it is. But what's interesting about this is it's also Natalie Wood's last movie. This is the movie that she was making when she died. She died off of California.
There's some like good conspiracy around that one.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there, but you know, she lost her life and we don't know why. But they had to sort of patch up. It was like when Heath Ledger died and they had to fix up the Terry Gilliam movie, you know, same sort of idea. Mm-hmm. They had to do some patching up. So I'd only seen her in a few movies, but yeah, interesting going back and watching her.
I mean, she was an absolutely stunning woman. I think maybe I've only seen one or two of her movies, but just a breathtaking person.
Well, I remember her and Richard Wagner when they were a couple, right? Like you would see them around, but yeah, let's not go there. But
you mean before she fell off the boat?
Yes, got drunk and fell off the boat. Yes, exactly. Yeah, but it was interesting seeing Louise Fletcher because she was sort of a pretty prominent actress after One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest too, right?
So yeah, I mean, she won the Academy Award for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And again, for our audience, she went on to play Kai Winn, right? One of the main villains for DS9.
Yeah, she's really good. But she's not a bad character in this one. And of course, you know, we've got Christopher Walken before he became sort of the sort of eccentric actor we know him as today, right? So
yeah.
Interesting to see him that way. But it was a good movie. And it reminded me, like I remember during the interview, I was thinking about that. There was also a movie starring Voldemort. What's his name? Ralph Fiennes?
Ralph Fiennes.
I think it was called Night. It was around the turn of the century or turn of the millennia. And there was a gadget that would scan you'd wear on your head and people could relive your experiences. Right. And, in that one, somebody gets murdered.
I remember that one. What was it? What was that called? That was actually not a bad movie.
Yeah. And then, because in this one too, a character dies and
Strange Days.
And as Louise Fletcher's character, she's having a heart attack. She's dying. She runs over to the machine and turns it on. Mm. So you get to experience. So the idea is they have a recording of her dying. Right. So, and of course, it messes with their heads when they watch it because you can play it back. Right. So, really interesting thing. So, it was a couple of things you could do with a VR headset, if you know what I'm saying, that maybe you shouldn't ought to do that people end up doing and then other people end up replaying. And yeah.
What service is Brainstorm on?
I had to get it through the library. There's an app called Hoopla, I think, that you can play stuff from your public library. So I didn't get to watch it in 4K, which means that you know our number one fan will never watch it. But no, it was good. It was worthwhile watching.
Just wanted to look back and forward at Silo. So Silo is coming out. Season 2 starts next week on Apple TV Plus. I'm very excited for that one. I did, in the interim between seasons 1 and 2, read the first book in the series called Wool by Hugh Howey, which was really terrific read if you have a chance, if you're a fan of sci-fi writing. Hugh Howey's actually a really talented writer. He writes very good dialogue. He writes very good description, and it makes for a very, very enjoyable read. The second season will finish the first book, Wool. So if you don't want to know what's going to happen on the upcoming season, avoid. But it is a terrific read. Recommend. I sat down just this week with my wife and started watching. She had not seen the first season, but she'd had more people than me say that she might like it. And so she trusts them far more than she trusts me when it comes to sci-fi shows, and said, okay, let's give it a try. And now she's hooked. So we're in the middle of a rewatch of season one. So I'm going back and sort of watching it again and enjoying it and just sort of recapturing. It's been a couple of years, obviously, since the first season. So loving that. And then also, yeah, really excited about what season 2 is going to bring next week. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, I have a Star Wars fan film entitled Star Wars X-Wing. It's relatively short and breezy. It's like 5 minutes or so. Shows a pew-pew-pew battle. But it's pretty well done. As a short, it would fit right in with the, you know, like Tales of the Jedi, you know, Tales of the Empire kind of stuff, where you get a short snackable sort of thing. It has a story arc for these X-Wing pilots. You kind of start in media res, and I feel like you don't really get all that confused. It's pretty pretty compelling as a short, and I'm hoping that they can capture some of this spirit in the new trilogy stuff. You know, where we shouldn't go like three movies wondering, who is this character? What would they do? It's like, I could tell you what these characters do. I only saw them for like 5 minutes. You really got the gist really quickly and efficiently. It's not new. It was new to me. It is 2 years ago, according to YouTube.
I've seen this.
It has 4 million views, so there's a pretty good chance you probably saw it. It was new to me on the feed.
Yeah, I think I had seen somebody had posted a short clip of it, maybe like 30 seconds of it on social, not that long ago, like within the past 6 months. And I had seen it and been like, what is this from one of the new games or whatever? So I kind of went down that rabbit hole on this too. But you're right. It's actually it's quite well done, especially for, you know, a fan project. Like it's yeah, again, I was kind of thinking when I first saw it, I was like, oh, is this like maybe a little like proof of concept for the X-Wing Rogue Squadron kind of thing that they're planning on doing? And yeah, I mean, if the Rogue Squadron thing turns out this well, like you could show me, you know, an hour and a half of X-Wings and other, you know, Star Wars vehicles doing cool things and another hour introducing all the characters and I'm in.
So there's all kinds of video games covering that stuff off, right? Lots of X-Wing games.
But they'd be really cool on the old Apple headset there.
Yeah, Vision Pro thingy, yeah. All right. Well, I guess this is it for another week. And so if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you, Jonathan?
You can find me on Instagram as @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you, where they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
All right. My name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Mastodon machine, the Threads machine, Blue Sky. Yeah, that's about it. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Spockcast podcast. This is Jean-Luc Picard.
Shut up, Wesley.
Sorry, say again. Just the tag. Gotcha. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spockcast website at spockcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spockcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag #AskSpockcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Call it George.
Question. Are we going to do Silo as a thing? Or are we going to talk about it? Like, do our recap stuff on it?
Yeah, we could do Silo. I mean, it was sort of my pick a while back. And
yeah, I mean, you were on it before the rest of us. But
yeah. So
yeah, I just...
And there's also another dragon thing coming, too. No, a Dune thing coming, right?
Yeah, so the Dune show is in, I think, 2 weeks. And then the 4th of December is Skeleton Crew. So we just have to decide if
there's one more penguin left, you said,
yes,
right?
Next week is the end of Penguins. So basically, next week would be, if we wanted to do it, it would be Lower Decks, last episode of Penguin, and Silo, and then the week after we'd lose Penguin, but we could pick up Dune if we wanted to, and then we'd have to, if we're going to pick up Skeleton Crew, then for a couple weeks we would have 4 shows.
Yeah, I think we'll do Skeleton Crew for sure. Yeah.
I just want to know whether I should watch or watch and take notes.
Well, just watch. I mean,
so we
watch and enjoy. God forbid.
Do you want to do the So. I'm just, again, are we going to follow our format for those, all 4 of those shows? Dune, Skeleton Crew, and Silo? 3 shows?
Well, I think, the Star Wars and the Star Trek stuff, yeah, but I don't know, it's up to you guys. And time, right?
Yeah, it might be a little bit more difficult to hold to the same structure for the other shows.
Yeah.
So maybe just watch in general, recap, thoughts, feelings, that sort of thing.
Sure. Why don't we do it that way? So, yeah, so for Silo and Dune, we could just talk impressions as opposed to details. Sounds good.
I'm just trying to see here if there's a list of things that are coming up somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only other thing that's supposed to come this year is Creature Commandos, which I don't know that that's worth doing a whole thing on.
I don't even know what that is.
It's the first thing from the James Gunn revamp of the DCU. It's basically Suicide Squad, but with a squad full of monsters.
Oh, okay.
The trailer's up. It looks funny. It looks fun. And I'm definitely going to watch it. It's just, again, it's a matter of whether it's like, I don't think it's necessarily something we want to just break down every episode or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you never know. We might watch the first episode of Dune or Silo or anything and be like, hey, this is great. We should totally do something more on this. But I don't know. As you say, I don't want to overcommit us to anything, right? I am a man of leisure now. I have no job. I have, you know, plenty of time to just sit about and you know, contemplate my navel. So, yeah. You know, whatever.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
So what's new?
Maybe we should go off recording for the next part.
All right, let's say goodbye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.